Welcome to Quaker Faith and Podcast, where we will explore traditional Quaker beliefs and the variety of Quaker beliefs found today. Hi, and welcome back to Quaker Faith and Podcast. We are your hosts, Mackenzie and Micah, and today we're going to be discussing the devil on account of that was a listener request we got. I don't know a whole lot about how Quakers think about the devil on account of I'm over here on the liberal side of things where we don't exactly talk about that much. So Mike is going to take the lead today.
Well, to be fair, you do know quite a bit about how Quakers think about the devil, because in your area of Quaker world, they think about the devil probably pretty differently than some other areas. So you can speak definitively about your realm of the Quaker universe.
I mean, we tend to say stuff about like darkness, like, cause you know, there's, you know, minding the light or, walking in the light. And so, you know, you might like that language of like shrouded in darkness that even you sometimes see in the Bible too. I think that kind of thing you might occasionally hear people talk about, but, more often it's actually being like much more specific about what we think is wrong in the world.
Right. Yeah. So, it's a little different than the man in red with the horns and the pitchfork, right?
Yeah, don't really hear much about that guy.
Yeah, and I, you know, to be fair, I don't think you hear a lot about that guy in most Christian circles. That caricature doesn't really relate to what I think most serious, you know, Christian theologians are talking about when they're talking about the devil. I think it's interesting that that for especially a lot of unprogrammed Quakers, there's a lot of hesitance, and not just unprogrammed Quakers, a lot of American Christians in general. There's a lot of hesitance to talk about the devil. It's sort of seen as being more superstitious and crazy. Sort of like maybe talking about angels. I think a lot of folks don't want to talk about angels in a similar way. They don't want to talk about the devil. That is sort of seen as like the realm of superstition rather than the realm of theology.
Yeah, I think when I think of like people talking about angels much, I tend to think of, you know, one of my friends growing up, her mother was a Reiki healer, and she had a lot of stuff about angels around the house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Reiki is pretty big in liberal Quaker circles, right?
Is it? I don't know.
I feel like I've run into a number of like Reiki people in liberal Quaker circles.
Huh. I don't know. I haven't exactly asked after it.
Yeah. Well, so in as far as the devil goes, I actually, now that we mentioned angels, I have no idea what different Quaker groups or early Quakers thought about angels. That's actually a very interesting question. But in terms of the devil, Quakers, not in the first generation of Quakers, but sort of in a middle period of Quakerism called the Quietist period, which was, you know, roughly from the 1700s to the 1800s. When I've read their writings, the devil is referred to fairly frequently, but usually in the writings I've read, not so often as the devil, but often referred to as the tempter. Or I've also seen, and this is actually from the first generation too, George Fox talked about the devil as the reasoner. The reasoner, yeah.
Okay, so that brings an interesting dimension to the Hicksite Orthodox thing, because Hicks said that reason is the recipient of revelation. And so one of the things that the Orthodox side didn't like about him was his use of reason. So that's interesting.
Well, that's news to me, because I always thought of the Orthodox side as actually being more interested in reason and more interested in sort of getting involved in the world, which involved reason. But yeah, Quakers, we're sort of running down all sorts of different rabbit holes right now, but Quakers have often and many times in places been very skeptical of reason, seeing reason as a human reason, seeing sort of human logic as being a potential pitfall and a way to fall into error, because when we get up in our own heads and we start thinking about things, all of our reasoning depends on certain assumptions, and if our assumptions are wrong, we can easily logically go to a completely wrong place. And an example I would give of this is something I fall into a lot is when I'm reading the news or I'm thinking about politics or something like that, it's very easy for me to accept the logic of the world, the logic of you know, imperial politics, and accept certain premises like that it's acceptable to use violence to prevent violence, and that violence can be redemptive, and prevent by preventing that, that by using violence we can prevent harm to innocence, and therefore it's justified. And when once you have those kind of assumptions, you very quickly it's very difficult to not fall into line with a way of reasoning about the world that fits very well with empire, with the idea that powerful entities like the United States government, like the Chinese government, like the Russian government, like any national government or power, should have the right to wage war and exercise violence in order to uphold a certain geopolitical order, which is equated with justice. And so once you've accepted certain premises, it's very easy to go to a terrible, terrible place based on things that at first seemed reasonable. And so in that context, it makes sense to think of the devil as a reasoner, in the sense that if we have, it is possible to have rational premises or philosophical premises that seem solid when we first accept them, but they lead to terrible places.
Well, and also rationalizing would also fit in there, I think.
Right, right. So Quakers, you know, up until at least the 20th century, and many of them, of course, until present day, have been quite open to the idea of the devil. I think in the early Quaker generations, there wasn't, as far as I can tell, a very distinctive understanding of the devil, because the idea that there was evil, and that there was a force of evil that was in rebellion against God and that sought to take us down with it, was just seen as self-evident. That was just understood as that was sort of how the spiritual universe works. So it's, in terms of giving background of, you know, Quaker views on the devil, it's as far as I'm aware, it's not a particularly interesting story, in that Quaker views haven't been that different from a lot of other mainstream Christian views.
Okay. I think when we talked about this before and about how I had no idea what we were going to say on this topic, I asked about the enemy as another term, and I think you said that one's really common in the Bible, right?
Yeah, and I mean, one author that I think a lot of people are going to be familiar with who was an amazing 20th century Christian author was C.S. Lewis, and C.S. Lewis, particularly if you get the chance to read his book, The Screwtape Letters, it's really funny because The Screwtape Letters is supposed to be a collection of letters written, it's one side of a correspondence written by a senior devil to a junior devil, in this correspondence, the devils, one of the demons, is always referring to God as the enemy. So it's very interesting to sort of turn that around.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah. But the enemy. Yeah, it's a biblical term for the devil, and the enemy is a very common Christian lingo for the spiritual forces of darkness. That it's not simply that things are bad. It's not simply, so for example, it's not simply that things have gone wrong, you know, for reasons beyond any control, but it's the idea that evil happens because of calculation and because of choices and because of systems that are set in motion that perpetuate evil. So, I mean, a great example of an evil institution or an evil cultural pattern would be racism. Racism is a self-perpetuating evil cultural pattern or institution that continues to remake itself throughout generations and results in suffering for billions of people, both oppressor and oppressed. And it's funny because you know, I think you can't really separate the question of the devil from evil. And I remember when I first became a Quaker, when I was first looking into Quakerism, I was very skeptical of the idea of evil. And I honestly can't understand quite why I was, because I definitely believed in evil in the sense that I thought that there were many things that were wrong. I thought that, you know, income inequality was wrong. I thought racism was wrong. I thought sexism was wrong. I thought these were evil things, but I wasn't comfortable applying the word evil to it. And I don't know why that was. I think it's because I associate it with a sort of moralizing or I don't know
what, fire and brimstone.
I don't know, because I don't know why it was for me. But I do feel like there's a hesitation in our culture in the United States today, or at least in our culture, in the DC metro area in the United States today, there's a hesitation to talk about evil, to talk about morality. Even I feel like in a lot of circles I run in, it's acceptable to talk about ethics but not morality, and that's significant.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
That's significant because I'm not even sure that many people who use the word ethics instead of morality actually have really thought about the difference. But the difference is that morality is about what is intrinsically right or wrong. And the foundation of that being God or some other reference point that is ultimate. So morality is rooted in something ultimate. Ethics is contextual. For example, like lawyers will have ethics about things they can and cannot do. There are professional ethics for lawyers, but that ethic may not apply to another profession or an individual who isn't a lawyer. So the idea when we talk about ethics, I think a lot of times in our culture here in the DC area, ethics is used as a synonym for morality that feels a little bit less threatening. But in fact, it points to something that a lot of us want to talk about: ethics and not morality, which separates us from the idea of an ultimate.
I usually think of ethics as being a lower bar than morality.
Yeah.
Like something can be totally ethical, but that still doesn't make it necessarily, depending on... I would also say that there is some relativity to... Oh, more relativity, that's the term. That is, different religions will draw different lines mm-hmm. of what is moral. And so you can say that something is ethical, but under X religion is or is not moral.
Right. I think the difference is that ethics doesn't make a universal truth claim. Ethics just says this community has agreed that we don't do this, and that's a part of our ethos as a group, that we don't do this thing, or we do this thing. So I think of like with lawyers or also with counselors, there's sort of privileged conversations where mm-hmm. A counselor, even if it weren't against, it may not even be against the law, but it certainly is against ethics. And a counselor can't share their privileged conversation with you ethically. Mm-hmm. But it's actually a separate question whether it would be morally right.
Well, so just what you were saying a little bit ago about people not talking much about evil or not talking much about the devil just in society in general mm-hmm. right now. And you were mentioning the DC area. So I have visited some of the other churches in the area that are pacifist leaning, like that are peace churches, like Quakers. Right. And so I mentioned in a previous episode the beachy Amish Mennonites in DC that nobody expects. And I remember there, I talked, a little old lady there was going on about how the enemy is everywhere and we need to be on guard against the enemy and all that sort of stuff, which was the first time I'd ever heard somebody talk like that, so that was interesting. I just kind of smiled and nodded. And then I've also visited the Christadelphians, who happened to be two blocks from my meeting house, and I never noticed they were there, they never noticed we were there, go figure. And they said that they don't believe in a supernatural devil. They think of when someone says, "The devil made me do it," as that being an excuse. And say, well, what devil do you mean? You mean your own evil inclinations, right? Because that's the closest you're going to get. Because they see the devil, the idea of a personified devil as being a cop-out or a, like, renouncing your, it's not my fault.
Right. Well, I mean, I think any Orthodox Christianity would say that, ultimately, the responsibility for evil actions rests with us. That even if there is a supernatural entity who tempts us, Jesus was also tempted by the devil, but did not sin. And so, at the end of the day, the responsibility lies with us. And we have resources to not submit to temptation. In that, when we have a relationship with God, God actually, God's a lot stronger than any forces of temptation and evil, so God can overcome these things if we'll turn to God and ask for it.
We're gonna annoy the non-theists again, Well, I suppose this whole topic would.
I kind of have resigned myself to annoying the non-theists, but hopefully they won't be too upset with me. So I think something that's interesting about what you said about the Christadelphians, or what one Christadelphian said to you about it being with the individual. I think the Quakers are actually, even liberal Quakers actually, are really pretty good. Maybe even especially liberal Quakers are very good about acknowledging structural evil, and that goes beyond the individual. I think a lot of Christians make the mistake of saying, "Well, it's really sort of just up to me, and it's really just sort of up to each individual. And each individual has choices to make. And if they make good choices, then they're on God's side. And if they make bad choices, they're on the devil's side. And that's pretty much all there is." But I think Quakers and some other groups of Christians have been really good about acknowledging, and I think the Bible is very good about acknowledging, that there is structural evil and structural injustice and structural and cultural milieu that we are in that makes it very difficult to avoid temptation and to avoid the influence of the enemy.
Collective sin is the term I usually use for structural evils like that.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, again, going back to racism, back to the roots of racism in this country. Of course, there are many racisms, so I shouldn't say it all goes back to this, but an enormous amount of the racism in this country traces itself back to the slave trade and the enslavement of millions of Africans here in this country. And that's something, you know, We as individuals can't just decide that we're going to renounce that and walk away from that. That remains, and that structure of oppression remains regardless of what choices we as individuals make. So that's really challenging for a worldview that says, you know, at the end of the day, it's about my choices, and I have to choose the good and reject the bad. Because we're bathed in this environment where it's not even... I mean, racism doesn't even do justice to what we're in, which is truly inherited oppression, and it enslaves, it enmeshes and entraps all of us, black, white, and any other ethnic background, and it's difficult to know what to do with that. And I think that is an example of a place where I would say that gives sort of a window into what maybe Christians are talking about when we talk about the devil or the enemy or the tempter or the deceiver or the reasoner. That is one way of encountering it in these systems of injustice, that it doesn't matter how nice of a person you are, you can't walk away from this kind of structural evil. So Mackenzie, maybe you can talk to us a little bit about your experience. I'd actually like to hear about two things from you. I'd like to hear about your experience growing up Catholic, because I know the Catholics really do believe in the devil. And I'd like to hear about your experience now among liberal Quakers in the D.C. area, because, again, like we've been saying, maybe Quakers in this area, for the most part, don't like to talk about the devil, but they sure do talk about injustice and oppression. And so, like, I do think that is relevant and related.
So to answer the part about Catholics, I actually don't really remember talking much specifically about the devil. I mean, you know, okay, my confirmation name was Michelle, which would be the female version of Michael, as in the archangel. So, like, you know, did learn that whole Lucifer rebelled against God and, you know, raised an army, etc. And, you know, now he's in hell and...
Not in the Bible.
I don't know where that... Really? Where's it come from?
None of that stuff's in the Bible. Yeah, it's
well, exactly. Catholics do a lot of not Bible stuff, because Catholics have tradition as one of the legs of their stool. So there's a lot of stuff that's church tradition.
Yeah, the whole Lucifer thing is interesting, because actually Lucifer was a word used the word was translated as Lucifer in the King James Version, and it comes from a passage in Isaiah where Isaiah is talking about the king of Babylon. And Lucifer means basically the day star, and interestingly,
the brightly shining one.
Exactly, and interestingly enough, Jesus is also referred to as the day star in the New Testament.
Yes, and morning star, And this results, okay, so how about this one? I learned that in Evangelical Friends Church Eastern Region, there is a Friends Church that's called Morningstar Friends Church, which anybody who's used to Morningstar meaning Lucifer and not used to Morningstar meaning Jesus goes, wait, what?
Yeah. So it's interesting because in the King James, they translated the word Morningstar as Lucifer, which you think like the Latinate, you know, root of luce is light. So I figure Lucifer must be bright, you know, morning star or whatever. Like it's some sort of Latinate thing going on there. And so they translated Lucifer. And then like all these people got this idea that first of all, that Lucifer was referring to the devil. And second of all, that Lucifer was a proper name, which of course it's not. But it's interesting to me because, you know, if you read the passage, if you read that passage from Isaiah, with the assumption that it's talking about like the fall of the devil from heaven and all this stuff, like you can sort of read that into it, but reading it in context, it's clearly talking about, God's judgment on the king of Babylon. So it's just like, where did we get this idea that this passage was talking about the devil? Like, I get the resonance with the mythology, but that's not what it means in context.
How you are fallen from heaven, O day star, son of dawn, how you are cut down to the ground, you who laid the nations low. That the one you're thinking of? Isaiah 14:12. Right, yeah, it says, you will take up this taunt against the king of Babylon. How the oppressor has ceased, the insolent fury ceased. The Lord has broken the staff of the wicked, the scepter of rulers, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but it's like, imagine, you know, 3,000 years from now, someone finds a text, you know, making fun of President Reagan and says, oh, this is clearly a story about the devil. It's like, no, I mean, it's clearly talking about a particular political leader. So it's just very, it's very interesting that that turned into sort of the basis of a mythology about the devil.
You should have gone for President Pierce. He's the one that is most universally agreed upon to be the worst president ever. And nobody who voted for him is still alive. Okay, wait, so you asked me about Catholics, and I said that, you know, I'm just familiar with the Rebellion and Michael the Archangel story. But... No, we didn't really talk much about the devil. Like, I mean, my religion classes, you know, we'd have Bible stories, we'd have parables, memorize the Beatitudes. No, I can't recite them anymore, but maybe I could sing them if I sang Blessed Are They. Learned about church history, the Schism of 1054 with the Orthodox Church, and then, you know, the... Protestant Reformation and the Counter Reformation and all that stuff. You know, memorize all the holy days of obligation.
But not so much about the devil.
No.
It's funny though, right? Because like in the movies, it's always the Catholic priest who's like coming with the holy water and like exorcising the demons and stuff.
Well, right, because Catholic priests do exorcisms, and I don't know if any other denominations do it. I did see an article like last year that was about an exorcist who, like, he was saying about how he determines which things are exorcism versus which things are mental illness. Which things are possession versus mental illness.
I saw that. And I saw that article, too. That was a very, very interesting article.
Yes, it was. We'll have to find that and put a link in the blog post just because somebody's going to be going, what?
Yeah. Have you ever experienced anything, Mackenzie, that you would name as a supernatural encounter with evil, or like an encounter?
No.
Like, I mean, is it fair to say you've had what you would call supernatural encounter with God?
Last week in meeting was different.
Can I take that as a yes?
Sure.
So you know, when there are times in our lives when we experience God's presence in a way that is distinctive and sort of rises above the normal, and I wonder, like, have you ever experienced evil in a way where you sort of took note of it in a way that that rose above the normal?
No, I don't think so. I mostly tend to notice evil in the form of those, you know, the oppression stuff that we've been talking about.
Why don't you talk about that?
Well, okay, so you asked how the liberal Quakers around here talk about evil, and so it's definitely common to hear people talk about injustice, oppression, or they'll talk about specific things that have happened, like those when like Boko Haram kidnapping all those girls, right? And but I'm not sure that the word evil would necessarily even be said. I'm sure probably sometimes it is, but I guess it's sort of evil is a broader term that covers all of those things, and then people tend to shy away from it, and so actually just try to be more specific to avoid saying it, if that makes sense. I did have one conversation where I mentioned that the word for sin in the Bible means something more like miss the mark, as in archery. You tried but didn't do right. Which somebody said to me, well, what about adultery? Like, if somebody cheats on their spouse, that's not just missing the mark, that's a conscious decision. And I was like, I imagine they're not thinking about it all that much when that happens. I don't know.
I don't know. There have been plenty of times when I've done wrong, and I've thought about it plenty while I'm doing wrong and knew I was doing wrong. I think of to give an example that's not my personal life. I think of John Woolman, who, when he was 6 years old, he killed a bird. Have you heard the story? So
Maybe,
John
I don't
Woolman
know.
talks about this in his journal, I think. When he was 6 years old, he killed a bird. And then he threw a rock at it and killed the bird. And then he went to find it and found the dead bird and then realized that it was a mother bird and that it had babies in a nest. And he realized, and this is a 6-year-old boy, he realizes that the baby birds are going to die because they don't have the mother to take care of them. And so he kills the baby birds himself to put them out of their misery. And it was at that moment that he realized that he was a sinful person. And that is like some heavy stuff for a 6-year-old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so, like, but I guess, at least for me, sometimes sin is just something. So this is the other side of what I was saying earlier. Sometimes sin is just something I'm enmeshed in, and it's almost like the air I breathe, and it's tough to know like how to separate myself from it. But sometimes I really do know that I'm doing wrong. And it's clear to me that I'm doing wrong. And I think of addiction in that way of, I don't know if you've ever been addicted to anything, but when you're caught in a compulsive behavior, you can know that you don't want to do it, and you can know that it's wrong and that it's harming you and harming other people, and yet you still do it. And it's like it's almost like someone else is controlling you, but they're not. You made the choice.
That sounds like what happens after you open a box of Oreos.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to tell my husband to like not bring cookies and Oreos and things home because I would just eat them all in one sitting. We ended up with he has somewhere that he hides them from me
Good move.
because I have no control around cookies.
So maybe the cookies could be another word for the devil. Yeah, as I say, I myself have, I feel like I have had, in the same way that I've, not in the same way, but in a way that's comparable to the way that I have experienced God's presence in my life. I feel like there have been times that I've experienced the presence of evil in my life, and it was something more than the circumstances. And that in that sense, I would label it as spiritual. There was something more than what was simply happening. Yeah. There have been times when I've experienced a malignant influence in my life and in the lives of others, and in situations, times when arguments break out when there's no reason for them to, times when there's confusion when there's no reason for the confusion, times when I feel depression come over me, when really there's no reason I should be feeling depressed. There have been times that I would label these things as in my experience, a presence of confusion or darkness or evil.
Well, and that use of darkness also was popular with early friends, right? Because you have Fox saying that he saw an ocean of darkness and an ocean of light, and the ocean of light overcame the ocean of darkness.
I saw that there was an ocean of darkness and death, and an infinite ocean of light and love flowed over the ocean of darkness. And in that I saw the infinite love of God, and I had great openings.
Do you actually have this memorized?
Yeah, and I'll give a shout out for the reason I have it memorized. I'll give a shout out to.
Oh, is it the Plain Song Lady?
Paulette Meyer is the Plain Song Lady, and she has a fantastic CD or album or whatever we're calling them these days, collection of songs called. It's by Paulette Meyer, and it's a Quaker Plain Song, and it's.
Yeah, I need to get that.
It's gorgeous. Everyone should have this, and everyone should listen to it. There was a period of time in my life for a couple of years where I probably listened to it literally 100 times and memorized the songs. They're fantastic.
I encountered her stuff because Marlboro Friends Meeting had a video up on their Facebook page where they had something, I think it was George Fox that she was singing from, was the background music on this video. And then, like, a week after this, we had at Adelphi, at our religious ed session, we were discussing Isaac Pennington. And then while we were all sitting there doing our queries, in the background, they had one of Paulette Meyer's songs that was Isaac Pennington's writing playing in the background.
Yeah, so, you know, if you get nothing else from this episode, you should find Paulette Meyer's music and listen to her plain song. It's very beautiful.
Well, I think we're pretty much out of time, and so we're going to sign off. If you liked the episode, share it with your friends, or just, you know, if you like the podcast in general, share it with your friends. We'd love to hear comments on Facebook, Twitter, or in the comments strictly on the website, which is quakerpodcast.org.
And apparently at this point we're taking requests, so definitely let us know about topics you're interested in. Mackenzie and I have been talking about actually structuring the podcast in terms of seasons. We haven't really moved forward with that yet, but it's probable that pretty soon we'll be starting with season 2. Which will actually be season 1 because we haven't been thinking of it as seasons thus far. But we'll be starting season 2 soon, and it is likely that we will structure that around a theme, around a reading, or around something. So if you have ideas about themes or topics that we might want to cover in season 2, definitely let us know and we'll take it into account.
You can find us on the web at quakerpodcast.org, on Twitter as Quaker Faith, on Facebook, and on iTunes.